So you've managed to really annoy financial advisors who listen to us.
Yeah, I'm really sorry. I didn't mean to. I just had some bad experiences. I did say they're not all bad. I'm sure some are lovely, and obviously our listeners would be.
Listen, we've only got 17 listeners.
Yeah.
And it turns out that two of them are independent financial advisors. You've managed to pick off over 10% of our audience.
What are the chances? I can't believe it.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 294 of iHeart Financial Advisors, as I like to call it now.
They are wonderful people.
They are. No, it's the Midfaith Crisis. My name's Nick Page, and there's Joe Davis.
Hello. I'm repentant.
Hello.
I'm repentant, all right?
You see, this is what comes of generalisations, you know, of extrapolating from your own limited experience, you know.
I do realise that's ridiculous. It's a bit like going to a restaurant, isn't it? And like having a bad meal, then going to another restaurant and having a bad meal, and then saying all restaurants are rubbish.
Yes.
I've had a couple of bad experiences, but as we shall find out later, there are beautiful, wonderful, independent financial advisors in the world. And it just so happens that two of the best are listening.
Well, there we are. That's good. Church notices. I don't think we have any, do we?
I don't think we've got any church notices. And that's because we're not doing anything, which, you know, we probably should do, can I point out.
Well, what did you have in mind? What should we be doing?
Well, meeting people, seeing people, having friends, Nick. I mean, we talk about this all the time. Getting you out of your house and meeting people.
I've been out of my house and I've met people, and on the whole, it's not been a rewarding experience. So, you know. Anyway, listen, how are you?
Well, apart from feeling like a boil in the bag of fish at the moment, because I've closed the window because you're going, it's too noisy out there. And so here I am, sweltering. I even put a shirt on for you because I thought you'd be, you know, I know how squeamish you get. So,
yeah, it's very hard to podcast when you haven't got a shirt on, you know. Or, you know, I'm watching you. It's like, I don't know, it's like some huge aquatic mammal. Anyway,
the answer is I am still smiling from the wedding I went to on Saturday. It was just a wonderful, joyful experience. And in fact, we're going to reflect on it a bit later, although I will just say that at one point in the reception, someone said, okay, sell Worthing to me. I mean, oh man, oh man, what a joy. So that was great.
You sure he didn't just want to buy Worthing because he thought it was going cheap?
No, it turned out he had to leave at 12 midnight, which was a shame. Anyway, I did go on Monday to see Deadpool and Wolverine, and, you know, again, high on the offensive stakes, but just so funny. So I very much enjoyed that movie. But the greatest thing of the week has been swimming in the sea. I mean, in this heat, I mean, it's just lovely to go and cool off, and it's been dead calm and just lovely and cooling. So very much been enjoying that. And yeah, meeting with a friend this idea to discuss the TV idea. So yeah, I wanted to talk about this with you. So here's the sort of working title, A Faith Fit for the 21st Century. And I need some help from friends with this. You know, like, what would a faith look like? If you could get rid of the embarrassing bits and the anachronistic bits and, you know, the bits that perhaps jar a little bit now, what would you be left with? What would be a faith that you would happily go out with your felt board and your sketch board on a Saturday morning and stand in the high street and proclaim to people? That kind of faith. What does it look like? What do you ditch? What you do? I mean, I would love anyone to write into joe@midfaithcrisis.org. You tell me what you think. So we're not talking about what we don't want. We are specifically honing in on what is a faith that actually works in the 21st century. I think it's an interesting question. I think it could be a good program. I'm not saying it would be, but it certainly has the potential to be. anyway, the point is, I'm meeting with someone this Sunday, a TV producer, to discuss the thing. So, you know, get your emails in quick if you fancy helping. That'd be great. That's me. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. Yeah, pretty hot. I mean, for those of our listeners who are in generally hotter climes, we're having what we call a heat wave, but what you would call mildly warm, really. yeah, but it's been nice because I like hot weather. Mm. And I was thinking, actually, you know how a while back you were saying about setting the bar low for joy?
Yes.
Do you remember that?
Yes.
You know, about identifying those points that bring you joy. I think I finally worked out what you know, my sort of quintessential joyful thing is. And it's walking along a chalk stream. Well, not on the chalk stream, obviously. Right. I mean, only in my holier moments can I manage that one. But walking beside a chalk stream, which is a particularly sort of unique sort of environment that we have here in this south of England, really. Walking along this chalk stream to a pub in the sunshine.
Yeah.
Have a nice meal and a pint. And that's with my dog and my wife. I can't think of anything more joyful than that. It was wonderful.
That is good. Apart from England thrashing somebody at cricket as well. At the same
time.
Oh,
you could be listening to that. Yeah. Yes. Which was remarkably going on at the same time, actually, now I come to think about it.
That is an idyllic picture. Well done. That does sound great.
Yeah. So, I mean, because we had a week off last week, and even though, as I said, I might have mentioned, I recorded the podcast even though I was on holiday.
You bravely did it.
I did. I sort of might have dropped that in. So we did try and go out last week a bit more in the end, and it was nice. It was great. So did that. I've been enjoying the sun. I like the sun. That's nice. Oh, there's a raven.
Oh, is it?
At the bottom of my garden.
How fabulous.
Well, not quite at the bottom of my garden. A couple of fields across.
There probably was a worm at the bottom of your garden, but the raven then ate it.
No, he's not really at the bottom of my garden. But if you go across the field and down to the canal path, he's there in the fields, croaking. I love a raven. Yeah. And, you know, unlike you, I know how to identify them. Because we were out together once when you just pointed at a crow and said raven.
It was a raven. Crow. It was a raven.
It's clearly a crow.
It really was.
The wrong shaped tail.
Oh, stop it. Don't know what you're
really
talking about.
You don't know what you're talking about. Anyway, oh, and you know the bread making, right? The bread making.
Yeah.
That I've discovered this marvellous, magical, foolproof recipe.
Yes.
Turns out it's not quite foolproof because this morning's was an absolute disaster. It looks like something David Attenborough explores on sort of, you know, when he's looking for insects. It looks awful. Anyway, but I'm still enjoying that. But, you know, it just didn't come quite right today. Yeah. Oh, and now I heard a talk yesterday, or a friend of mine gave a little talk yesterday, and she was talking about not belonging, and she had a really interesting approach to it. And I just want to throw this out there, and then I think we'll come back to it in a future episode, because it really struck me about to have links in with mid-faith crisis. She was raised in Nepal, born and raised in Nepal, and then moved to England, or to Scotland, I think. And so never felt like she quite belonged anywhere. Mm. You know, never felt like she quite fitted in and was made to feel different. But she was actually talking about how not belonging is liberating.
All right.
It's actually liberating because you can actually, you don't have to conform to anything.
Yeah.
You don't have to sort of agree. You are free from all those sort of inbuilt links and you can find your own path. I thought that was a really interesting take, because so often in mid-faith crisis, one of the big things is we feel like we don't belong anywhere. We feel like we don't belong in our tribe anymore.
Yeah.
And it can be very disorienting, but maybe it's different. Maybe it's actually liberating.
That is fascinating.
To be interested to hear from our listeners and see what they've got to say about that. That'd be great.
Yeah, well, we might talk a bit about belonging later. Anyway, you say listeners. I've just been thinking about this recently. Should we call people who go to all the trouble to download a podcast and listen to it listeners, or should we call them friends? I mean, I know this isn't particularly funny. I've just been thinking about it recently. Aren't these our friends?
Absolutely not. You've really touched my English nerve here.
Why am I touched your English nerve?
Well, because you always do this. You kind of, like, the minute you bump into someone, they're your friend for life.
They are.
You know, you barely know them.
I'm living out the gospel of Jesus.
Are you really? Because you see, this is one of the key differences between us, I think, is you think everyone's a friend, whereas I think everyone is a potential threat. That's the difference.
It's true, sadly.
Well, I take your point. I think because I feel like I've felt more and more over the past couple of years, really, that what we have here is a community, really.
Exactly.
But I think what's put me off friends as a thing is, frankly, Facebook.
Ah, yeah.
You know, the idea that every people you don't know, whose only connection to you is some kind of digital message of some kind, is your friend. Well, they're not your friend. You know, that's friendship to me is something different, you know, and therefore I wonder if I think they feel like more than listeners but less than friends.
okay I think that's a helpful distinction. That's good, because like the person you met on holiday that you're never going to see again, but you friended them on Facebook because it was a polite thing to do, and now they've been your friend for 10 years on Facebook, but you never communicate. That's true. That isn't a friend. I sort of think of our listeners as people we interact with. They were talking. There's a conversation, albeit a digital one. And also they bothered to go to all the trouble of downloading and listening. So there's a big difference between that and the, you know, the person who's not really a friend on Facebook.
Well, that's true, I think.
Yeah.
So maybe it's something more about community. But rather than our listeners, it's our community.
Yeah.
Although even then, I think, you know, that's slightly stretching the term. But why don't we ask them what they want to be called?
I know. Well, friends, what do you think?
Well, listeners, what do you think?
No, how would you like to be referred to on this podcast? I mean, I'm here to call you friends, but that's too much for Nick.
I'm here to call you valued beings.
As worse.
Of some kind.
Like the pet dog. No, because that is a very valued being. Like the pet caterpillar.
Well, the stick insect. No, you're much more than stick insects to me, listeners.
Exactly.
You really are.
Friends.
Oh, this is going to get confusing,
right.
Isn't it?
Can we just get on with the feedback? Because this is getting silly now.
Yeah, we will do that. But I think it's important for me to do these two.
Oh.
Because they're very much in terms of a rebuke. Perhaps they're not listeners, they're just rebukers, these ones. Anyway, this is from Martin. He says, hello, I've been struggling with the whole concept of humility recently, and I just wanted to thank you both for really helping me to crack it. As an independent financial advisor, I was just delighted to hear on the last episode that I'm amongst the lowest of the low.
I never said
that. He says, keep up the good work, boys, and if you want one of those PSAs with extra Roth, give me a call.
Thanks, Martin. I may take you up on that.
And he does sign it off, much love. So that's
right. He's a lovely, gracious man. Thank you, Martin.
And this is from Sean. And she says, I was sad to hear that you haven't had a great experience with financial advisors, but I believe that my job is a place where I'm able to minister to others. The individual who's scared of money, having had a bad childhood experience where the parents were out of work and they were living hand to mouth. The divorcee reeling from their change in circumstances, who has lost an income or part of their income and is trying to rebuild their life. The widow who left all the financial decisions to her husband and has no idea how to deal with money.
Mm.
The family facing the care needs of a relative. Those who have received an inheritance, dealing with the guilt they feel it is undeserved and mourning their loss. The soon-to-be retiree who wants to know if they have enough money to stop working. I want to walk with these people and give them the courage to share their life stories and ambitions and support them in their financial decisions. Perhaps the Mid-Faith Crisis podcast might want to explore the subject of money or filthy lucre, and definitely one on tithing, both for those financially crippled by it and for those who can't release their grip on money.
Mm.
And that's from Sian, who I met recently. She was very lovely.
Well, it's lucky she's not a friend and only a listener. That's all I can say. Sean, that is brilliant. Yeah.
So, listen, what would you like to say in terms of, you know, just ongoing humility and abasement?
I'd like to say that Sean and Martin are fine examples of doubtless brilliant financial advisors. And like I said earlier, you know, a couple of bad experiences ought not to spoil for anyone. I said last week there'd be brilliant ones around, and now they've written in. So there you go.
Yes, thank you. And it's very graciously written. And obviously, ooh, you know, I think of the tone of how you spoke. It was very personal. It was coming out of your own experience. It was fine, you know. But
also, I mean, I really like the suggestion that we talk about money.
I agree.
And because it's one of those kind of taboos. And I feel so vulnerable because I'm 59 years old and I'm so ignorant about money. I'm so ignorant. So I have to trust someone. Unfortunately, the person I've met with now, I do trust, and I'm sure they're going to do a great job for me as well. I wouldn't meet with a financial advisor if I didn't trust all of them, and the one I'm currently meeting seems very trustworthy and good. So, yeah, but I like the idea of talking about this more.
Yeah, we should explore. And if you've got anything to say on the subject of money, do write in. We'd love to hear from you. So anyway, I just wanted to do that for the laughs.
Yeah, you wanted to rub that in, didn't you? Thank you.
I did. So carry on.
Yes, moving swiftly on. Andrea, she said recently that had a week of mission in our area, and our normal Sunday service was led by someone from an evangelistic organisation. He was talking all about healing and gave many examples. His points were that if God could heal so-and-so, he can heal you. If so-and-so thinks they're not worthy to be healed, God still did it, and many more similar. It took all of my strength not to walk out. And she said I was near the front, so it would have been very obvious. I just thought he was so inconsiderate for all those people, potentially the majority of the congregation, who have not been healed themselves or had family and friends not healed after years of prayer. No mention of that at all, and seemed to infer that anyone who asks will be healed. I do appreciate there are miracles, but felt this was way too much. Hope this is pithy enough, and apologies that it's probably me just ranting. I know you must be discussing healing in previous episodes, but my memory is shocking. We have talked about it. You're absolutely right, Andrea. But be kind to yourself. You know, these things do upset us when we stumble across them, don't they?
We have talked about it, but never mind Andrea's memory being shocking. I can't remember when we talked about it, but I know we have. Perhaps my memory needs healing. Anyway, I think it's a really difficult one because, you know, I never want to close myself off to those events. And, you know, I was talking to a friend about this who was sort of challenging me on this about the other day. Certainly in my work, I hear loads and loads and loads of stories of people who become Christians in countries where Christians are routinely persecuted. And they become Christians because they've healed, because something miraculous has happened. And, you know, we're always going to have problems with this in the sense of, you know, what's documentary evidence and what's testimony and all this kind of stuff. But I do think maybe just an acknowledgement that the thing is slightly more complex, you know.
A lot more complex, yes.
Yeah. And I suppose it does raise the issue, which again, we've talked about before, is, you know, one of the biggest challenges, I think, in mid-faith crisis if your view of God changes to a less interventionist God, let's say.
As perhaps mine has.
Yeah, well, I think mine has to some extent as well, you know. But if you move in that a direction, then you've got a real issue about what do you do with intercessory prayer? How do you deal with it? What do you do with those statements of Jesus, which seem absolutely clear on answered prayer and all that kind of stuff? It's a complicated thing, and maybe we should circle back round to it at some point.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so that's finance and healing for two more episodes. Okay, good.
Often linked by some evangelists in North America, I believe. But
yes.
Anyway.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Well, look, I won't get on my high horse now. Let's leave it for those episodes. But yes, I do feel your pain, Andrea, and just as a little sneak preview, I don't think this is how the universe works, really, that whole healing thing. But we'll come back to it. Mark says this. He said, I listened to episode 293 yesterday and was pleased to hear you and Nick agreeing a view of the Bible was the record of an evolving understanding of God over a long period of time. Now, I'm no Bible historian, but a little research seems to indicate that the Bible was written over a period of around 1,500 years. It must be almost 2,000 years since the last book of the Bible was completed. It seems to me that it's inconceivable that we can accept that the evolutionary process of understanding God ended at the time the last New Testament writer put down his pen. Indeed, there is, for example, now unanimity that slavery is not sanctioned by God, and widespread agreement among many Christians that there should be no limit on the role of women in the church. One major area where evolution seems to be stalled among some, to what must be the complete bemusement of non-Christians, is in the area of gay relationships. If we can accept that in the areas I've quoted above, our understanding of God has progressed, I am left with no option but to conclude that the continuing exclusion of LGBT plus people in some churches from equality with straight people is not, as is claimed, the authority of the Bible, but instead the innate prejudice of those that cling to outdated understandings. Prejudice in the churches against gay people is a choice, pure and simple, and it's time those of us who see things this way called it out as such. There we are, strong views from Mark there. And if I can, I'd like to respond to this in a little while, because we're going to talk a bit about the Olympics and we're going to talk a bit about the wedding I went to. And I think that my response is going to come in there. Do you want to say anything at this point?
No. I'll chip in when you get around to it. Really.
When I get on my hobby horse. Well, two things I really wanted to reflect on. Firstly, the furore over the Olympic opening ceremony. And why don't we start there? So the Olympics, as for those that don't know, are being held in Paris. It's this sort of glorious kind of, you know, idea of peacetime and the nations coming together to celebrate sport and compete together and all that sort of thing. There's lots and lots of history for it. And Nick will probably know it all, I would imagine.
Not really. But, although I have been to Olympia, which is where the Olympics started. And I've run around the running track.
Have you? That's quite impressive.
Yeah. Well done. I mean, I didn't do it as they did it, because originally the Olympics was all male and all athletes were, well, they didn't wear any clothes, basically. I decided not to do that.
Thank you.
You know.
So during what can only be described as a very prolonged opening ceremony, much of which I missed, I'm glad to say, there was a scene, a tableau acted out with drag queens and all sorts of a feast depicting Dionysus, I gather, the god of grapes and, you know, wine and that sort of thing. And Christians got very upset. Some Christians got very upset, not all Christians, that they were sort of what seemed to be the Da Vinci's depiction of the, you know, that one with the 12 disciples. Oh, yeah. At a table. I think another Scandinavian Jesus, if memory serves. Yeah. There. And that's not at all offensive, because of course he wasn't Middle Eastern.
Blonde.
Yeah, no, of course not. So Christians got very upset that this was somehow, you know, mocking the Last Supper of Jesus, and I suppose, you know, by association, the suffering of Jesus. Mm. And how dare they do that? And they wouldn't dare do that with Islam or try and offend another religion, but somehow Jesus and Christians seem to be the beating boys for everything. And then, of course, the inevitable social media storm rose with calls for people to boycott the Olympics. And I didn't see it. I heard about it afterwards, and I did watch it. I honestly could not see what the fuss was about. So either someone needs to inform me about this, but it looked quite fun to what I see. I did not see Jesus being mocked at all. No, not really. And even, here's the point, even if Jesus was being mocked, I think the point is overlooked is Christians have been the dominant oppressing power, or Christianity is and is still seen by many in the world as the dominant oppressing power. And so, as Mark's email said, there are those still being oppressed by the church. And I think they've got every right to sing and dance and complain about that, to be honest. Not that that's what was going on in the Olympic ceremony, I hasten to add. But so, my questions coming out of this is, why do Christians, to my way of thinking, get steamed up about all the wrong stuff? Why don't they get steamed up about the things Jesus got steamed up about, for example? Like lack of forgiveness, like turning the other cheek, like loving your enemies, like being kind to one another, like, all that stuff, injustice, people being treated really unfairly. Why aren't we steamed about that? But mock us. And that mobilizes this army to go crazy on social media and really get offended and then threaten boycotts and do, well, threaten boycotts about in things that are unjust. That's what I want to say to that. And I wondered how our friends felt about it. I wonder how you feel about it. Just, you know, I don't get it, is what I'm saying.
Well, I mean,
sorry.
Interestingly, you seemed quite outraged about their outrage.
Yes, well, that is a thing, isn't it? That is a thing. Good point.
Well, I sort of missed a lot of this because I'm not on social media, so yeah. To me, I don't think it's as big, actually, as maybe it seems. I think it's an example of how social media magnifies it, but the rest of the world just gets on with things. I mean, I did watch the vast majority of the opening ceremony, which, as you said, did go on quite a long time. I thought it was, in fact, going to stretch the next 4 years to the next Olympics. It had some very entertaining bits and wonderful bits. A lovely bit where this woman on a horse was riding up the Seine. That was quite fun. Oh. And then watching Serena Williams trying not to be sick on a boat. That was very entertaining and very unusual. And I tell you what, I did find that the bit that's been talked about, which is a depiction of Dionysus or yeah. Bacchus, the god of wine and parties, I found it offensive, I'll be honest.
Okay.
But I didn't find it offensive because it was sort of mocking my faith. Because actually it's not really, because the painting of the Last Supper by Da Vinci is not a sacred object.
Right.
It's a very sort of historically inaccurate depiction of an event. So, you know, if you worship Da Vinci, you could probably get upset about it, I think. The reason I thought it was offensive was because it was really, really bad art.
Oh, wow.
And it was cliched and immature, I thought, and childish and propaganda, you know. And of course, all Olympic opening ceremonies are propaganda. Mm. They're about sort of selling the country to you and saying how wonderful your country is. And this was an attempt, I think, to sell France as, you know, this glorious secular nation. And, and the reason I think I got annoyed about it was firstly because it was just all so obvious. You know, you just knew what they were going to do. There were various little clips in, and you kind of just knew where it was going. And for me, it lacked any artistry and just settled for caricature, you know. And secondly, I thought it was pretty really disrespectful to other cultures, actually, because it reminded me of what Lisa Jane Lewis said when she was on talking about Eurovision.
Mm.
And you interviewed her and she talked about our entry. And she said that the reason our entry didn't get many votes is not really because it was a bad song. It was because the staging was so deliberately provocative.
Yeah, yeah.
That actually you're not really challenging other people's views of their culture. You're just upsetting them. You're just rubbing it in their face.
Yeah. It's too much. Yeah.
And so I think there's absolutely a reason to present, you know, liberal values. If you're holding the Olympics in a liberal country, and you've got to do that, but there's a thin line, I think, between doing that and propaganda, and this is where I think it stepped over. So I wasn't, you know, upset on a religious grounds, and it rather surprised me that everybody was, but I didn't like that bit because I just thought it was a bit crass, to be honest.
Okay.
Also, it's a complete misreading of Dionysus because, I mean, yes, Dionysus was the god of wine, but he was also the god of madness and insanity.
Oh, really?
You know, I mean, is that really what you want to be doing? You know, he's the god of sort of, you know, religious ecstasy that tips over into absolute sort of craziness and disaster often. So, you know, I think it was just a bit naff, really.
Okay. Well, it seemed to me that it was one of the more vibrant, lively bits of the opening ceremony. But like I say, I shouldn't really comment on it because I confess I didn't watch it all. But I know it was on before it went out and it was still on when I got back.
But your point is, you know, if you're going to get outraged.
Yeah.
I think your point is valid. If you're going to get outraged by the right things. You know, yeah. And if you're going to boycott the Olympics, boycott it because it's sport washing at times, or it gets yeah. sold to the highest bidder, or because, you know, like yeah. the World Cup, I think it negotiates new tax rates wherever it goes, and it makes yeah. enormous amounts of money, and it generates enormous amounts of corruption. So let's get outraged about the right things here.
Yeah, yeah,
I agree with that.
Well said. Did we not do an episode once about get angry about the right things? I think we probably did.
I think we've already established that we no longer have any functioning memories.
It's true. Well, and the other thing is an observation on this wedding I was at. So it was two Christian people being married. It was held in a church. It was a glorious service. It was colourful and lively. There was a time of worship included at the bride and bridegroom's request. They even took communion straight after the vows, which seemed really symbolic and an example of their faith. And I just have a few reflections on that I thought would be fun to share with you, really. First, you know, the sheer number of young people singing these songs was really both sort of quite inspiring, and it reminded me of that time in my life when I would have been, you know, young for a start and singing those songs. So we sang this song, you know, the famous one, "Oh Lord My God, When I in Awesome Wonder." I mean, everyone loves that hymn, right? But you just think, you were singing it, I was thinking, this is a really lovely creation hymn. I can sing this. And then the third verse hits you. "When I think that God, his son not sparing, sent him to die for me," and all the rest of it. And you just thought, oh gosh, no. this isn't helpful. But it didn't bother me, because I think I've got to the point where I can sort of start seeing all this stuff and actually just enjoying it, because I just think, yeah, for me, that's metaphor. What is salvation? It's not about God sending his son to die for me. It's about God dealing with all the rubbish in my life that hinders me, that, you know, the demons inside of me, the sin, the darkness inside of me. And God loving me anyway, and God forgiving me, and God, you know, so I sort of, I can cope with all the language, is what I'm trying to say. It didn't bother me as much as I thought it was going to bother me. You know, not that they sang this, but you know, all those songs that we've talked about, that the father turns his face away and all those sort of things that we sing about. So I do think there's a point in the journey where you go to church and you sing all this stuff, but you don't get angry about it anymore, actually. You just think, oh, yeah, OK, some people are taking this very literally. You don't have to take it very literally. And you can still sing it if you're not doing that. You can still be true to who you are, I think, and sing it. And that was an interesting response from me. Do you want to say anything about that or not?
Well, I think you're right. I think what you maybe experienced there is the context of a real sort of loving community in a joyful time.
Yeah.
And so underlying all that's happening is something wonderful. And so the other stuff, you know, you can deal with some mixed messages or some things you don't agree with.
Yeah.
Because the underlying the underlying atmosphere, the underlying messages are so great.
Yeah. And about love and faithfulness and good stuff.
Yeah. And I think personally that's how I try and cope with a lot of this stuff as well, you know, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But you know, I think if I can buy in to the underlying ethos of everything that's going on, then of course I'm going to sing things that don't. But if it keeps coming back to Jesus and the fullness of life, then I think, you know, you can ride a lot of that. You're never going to find a church where every song lyric chimes exactly with your own views, no. I don't think. Nor should you, really.
No. And I think, you know, back to that age old question of should I stay and should I go? And, you know, we often get emails to the effect of, I just don't know whether I should stay in the church. I don't know whether I should leave. I think in part it's down for your experiences. I think if you haven't been really badly hurt by a church, you probably can find a way of staying eventually. It's not bad. But if church has been something toxic for you for any number of reasons, then you probably have to leave at least for a while and possibly permanently. It just depends on you and everything. And I think we should be relaxed about that, because I don't think it's something, you know, the Almighty is going to be judging us over. I think, you know, God just wants us to love God and love one another. Isn't that how Jesus summed it up?
Well, words to that effect, I think. Yeah, and then he said, how dare, whatever you do, get upset about paintings of me. That's what he said.
Is that it? Is that what he said in the Greek or Aramaic? And then, so can I share another reflection?
Mm.
And the other reflection I just thought was back to the point that you raised in that about belonging. You were saying about your friend was talking about the liberation in not belonging. And I was just thinking about, you know, as I saw those young people and how coherent they were, you know, the sort of tribal sense of that occasion, that we are all Christians singing here, singing these songs about what we believe and about who God is and who we are, therefore, and, you know, in a very religious, it struck me that perhaps one of the primary reasons I ever became a Christian at the age of 14 was that desperate need to belong somewhere, having so long felt, and I don't have the excuse of being brought up in Nepal or anything, but you know, like I never felt like I belonged anywhere. And then I think, you know, when I had my experiences of the church, which, as you know, Mark, was over the issue of the treatment of the LGBTQ community, I think one of the key, you know, the most painful part of that was not going every Sunday to my, what I perceived was my community, and seeing everyone. It's like, oh no, once again, this is demonstration of the fact I don't belong anywhere. And even this community that I've been a part of for however long it was, 30 odd years, now has rejected me because I don't belong there. But, you know, it's that Brené Brown thing. The only place you can ever belong is to yourself. And I just think that's true now. And I feel like I can see how I'm so grateful for my Christian background and my Christian heritage, because the church gave me a place where I was valued and belonged, and it gave me an identity. And I desperately needed that. I was so rootless and so insecure as a teenager. It was lovely to be embraced into the family of God. And I think, you know, on my baptism day, you know, there was lots of symbolism and prayers and even a certificate around, I am becoming part of the family of God. You know, that was so great. This is, you know, I finally belong. Now it's just interesting to note, isn't it? Sort of as you journey on, it's not such a big deal to me, actually. Community is important. It's really important to have friends around. And for me, it's important to have friends who encourage me in the way of Jesus, as you do. But it isn't important for me to be a part of, you know, a particularly religious community. And it's okay. You know, I know you'll have a different experience, because for you, I know going to church is a very, very important part of your Christian experience now. But it's not for me. And I realized it doesn't bother me like it did, you know, 10 years ago, I guess.
Well, I think we all need places to belong.
Yeah.
You know, that is a human need. And we have different places. We have, you know, sometimes we have our family, and sometimes we have our locality, and sometimes we have sometimes we have hobby groups and you know, clubs or things like that, or sporting teams. I think we all need that, but I think equally it's dangerous to get too tied to that and think that everything about you is only that, you know, that you're only defined by where you belong.
Yeah.
The liberation I think my friend was talking about comes from realizing that actually we are enfolded in God and we belong in a relationship with God, and therefore you don't have to be defined by your tribal group either.
Yeah.
You know, you can be strong outside of it, and you can gain a certain perspective outside of it that you would never gain inside. For your own journey, Joe, you've gained an enormous perspective on things outside of the tribe where you used to belong, and that the leaving of that tribe was obviously painful. But I think there's also a liberation there, obviously. And so, you know, I think, yeah, it's moving church after being in church for, you know, 30 years of a particular church community, and moving has brought some new insights for me as well about what a church community really is and what it brings to you and what that means, which maybe I'll reflect on at another time. Mm. But I think yeah, it's that balance, isn't it? I think we genuinely need places to belong, but we don't need to be defined by those places either.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how time's going, but it feels like we're almost up, isn't it?
We're over up. We are beginning to rival the Paris opening ceremony for longevity here.
Well,
any minute now, I will be dressing up in a bizarre costume and posing as a particular Renaissance painting.
Okay, well, I'll ride a horse somewhere.
Okay, good. Well, listen, we've covered a lot of ground, haven't we? We've covered a lot of it. It's been a bit rambly, but we covered a lot of ground over sort of whether or not listeners are friends and you know, social media and all this kind of stuff and fake outrage and real outrage. So thank you for listening. And thank you for supporting the podcast in so many ways.
And thank you for being a friend.
Oh, well, there you are. That's the theme tune. Thank you for being somehow connected to us in some vague way. And I think, Joe, we should end with a prayer.
Yes.
And I think that because it's on the running order. And so why not do that?
Thank you. So this is Pope Francis' prayer for countering fake news. So here you go. This seemed very appropriate for this week. Lord, make us instruments of your peace. Help us to recognise the evil latent in a communication that does not build communion. Help us to remove the venom from our judgments. Help us to speak about others as our brothers and sisters. You are faithful and trustworthy. May our words be seeds of goodness for the world. Where there is shouting, let us practice listening. Where there is confusion, let us inspire harmony. Where there is ambiguity, let us bring clarity. Where there is exclusion, let us offer solidarity. Where there is sensationalism, let us use sobriety. Where there is superficiality, let us raise real questions. Where there's prejudice, let us awaken trust. Where there's hostility, let us bring respect. And where there is falsehood, let us bring truth. Amen.
Thank you for being a friend. Travel down a road and back again. Your heart is true, you're a path.